They take him to Annas, then they take him to Caiaphas, and again, the only charge they can get is that he is guilty of blasphemy. And that's what they have. He's blaspheming God. He called himself the Son of God. And then they take him to, this is going on, and then they take him as they're getting ready to, for trial, I guess, getting ahead of myself. Let me back up just a little bit. And while they're doing that, there is people out in the courtyard. There are people out in the courtyard, you know, they're there, and there's another guy that's there, the same guy that was so brave earlier on. You know, he's sort of there. He's sitting back in the shadows, not wanting to get too close. But anyway, somebody stokes up the fire, I guess, a little bit, you know, and all of a sudden it blazes up. And, you know, when it blazes up, you can see things around. And somebody says, hey, that's that guy right there. He was with this man. And he said, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know. You see, Peter has it in his mind. He has seen the crucifixion as well. He knows what it is to be crucified as well. You know, it's a public thing. And he says, I don't know what you're talking about. And then a little bit later, again, somebody says, this is a guy we can devil the way he talks. I love coming to Mississippi. I can tell by the way y'all talk that y'all are from Mississippi. I love y'all's accent. When I was a missionary down in the South Pacific, we had most of the people there were people from New Zealand and Australia. And you know how funny they talk, you know. They talk real funny. And one night we were sitting around talking with a group of them, and I said to them, I just love y'all's accent. And they're looking around. And they said, sir, we don't have an accent. You do. Or I would be afraid by my accent. Not only from the United States, but from Arkansas, Tennessee, you know. Well, Peter was betrayed. And at this point, he is so belligerent about who he doesn't know that he brings down cursings and oaths. You know, he goes back, he has a regression back to the days when he was just an old fisherman on the lake, probably. And he brings down a few oaths to prove that he is not who you think I am. I don't want any part of this, but we know the story about the time that, as it says, the cock crows. And Jesus looks at him, and Peter understands. It's true what you said, Lord. I denied you three times. Before it went off twice. Another trial takes place early morning, about daybreak. The 70, the Sanhedrin, is going on. And they have a trial. They can't do anything, but they know they can't do anything because the Romans, they let them have way somewhat, but they can't kill anybody. They want this man dead. But they can't kill him. So they carry him to Pilate. And Pilate is there, and he is the governor, and they bring him before him. We know the story. And what I'm going through, folks, I know you've heard 1,000 times, but just bear with me, okay? And so Pilate says, you know, this man's innocent in time, you know. Pilate wants to get him off his hand, and he remembers that Herod's in town because of Passover, you know. And so he sends him over to Herod. Herod wants to see him because Herod has heard about all the stuff that he does, the miracles that he does, and he wants to have a show, you know. So Herod tries to get him to perform a miracle. Jesus is not going to perform a miracle. As a matter of fact, Jesus is not going to do anything. He's not going to say anything. Finally, Herod says, send him back to Pilate. And we know that he finally does. And so Pilate and the Jews have their confrontation. Now, interestingly, that the Jews, the religious leaders, they will do all kinds of things that are illegal, but they won't go into the place where Pilate is because they don't want to be unclean. Isn't that amazing? They're so legalistic. You know, they're not going to go in there, but they'll lie. They'll have false trials. They've already had three false trials against the law. They'll do everything they can to get rid of this man, but they're not going to endanger themselves because of the Passover, you know, let's say the unclean, you know. But anyway, they're trying to get him dead. About a half a mile down the road, there is a fortress of Antonio. And there are three guys that are in jail down there that have been on trial. They have been convicted. And one of the guys is called a notorious guy. He is notorious. That means actually he is public enemy number one. That word is, he is a marked man, this man in there. They were insurrections. They're murderers, actually, in jail, waiting for their time to be executed. And it is during this time of Passover that Pilate had a custom of giving up somebody, turning somebody loose. And so in the conversations and in the trials of that, and as I said, we're not going to go into all of that, but nevertheless, finally Pilate gets in his mind, I know what I'll do. This man, you know, Jesus needs to be let loose. He's innocent. He's a good man. He hasn't done anything. So he said, I'll put up this guy, Barabbas. He's bad. I mean, he's a bad dog. He's a mad dog. You know, he's number one enemy. I'll put him up, and surely the people will want this murdering insurrectionist to be taken, you know. So if I put him up, it's either Barabbas or Jesus. They'll take Jesus. And he thought he had found a loophole. Well, what Pilate didn't know is that it wasn't a loophole, it was a noose around his own neck. Because they said, give us Barabbas. We want Barabbas. Release Barabbas. Now, half a mile away, Barabbas is in prison along with two other thieves, and Barabbas is hearing some stuff going on. He can't hear the little talk, but when the crowd gets loud, he hears. And while he's down there, he probably hears this, Barabbas, Barabbas, Barabbas. And he's thinking, oh no, that's a lynch mob. They're getting ready to come get me, probably. You know. And the second words he heard, because the crowd gets loud when he calls out, what do I do? When Pilate says, what do I do with Jesus? He doesn't hear that. But all of a sudden the crowd gets loud when they say, crucify him, crucify him. And that's what Barabbas hears. Oh, Barabbas is scared. Because all he has heard is that there's a crowd that's hollered his name. And the second thing that he's heard hollered is crucify. So they said, what will I do with Jesus? And crucify him. And we know the story. How that Pilate made Jesus to be crucified. All of a sudden, Barabbas hears the soldiers coming to his cell. He hears the bitter patter of feet. Soldiers with their sandals hitting the pavement. They're walking to his cell. And he's saying to himself, they're coming to get us, guys. These two guys that are with us. They're coming to get us. But especially Barabbas. And all of a sudden the door swings open. And instead of the captain of the guard saying, Barabbas, we've come to get you to crucify you. He says, Barabbas, you're free. Someone has taken your place. Wonder what went through Barabbas' mind at that point. He knows he's guilty. He knows that he deserves punishment. He knows that he does not deserve freedom, but he's free. Somebody is taking his place. I've got to learn something about that man who's taken my place. What kind of man was he? He may have already known when somebody said, the man called Jesus is taking your place. And he probably has heard something about this man called Jesus. A man who was compassionate. A man who was tender-hearted. A man who was forgiving. A man who was full of grace and mercy. A man who would heal the sick, the lame, the blind, and so forth. That man who was innocent would take Barabbas' place. What did they do with Jesus? Well, the first thing they did is they took Jesus and this innocent man, this wonderful, loving person, whom the Bible describes as he would not even break a reed. He would not even blow out the pen. He was going to be so compassionate and so good. That's how good this man was. They took this man and did to him what Barabbas should have done. And so what they did is they took him outside and they had this place that was like a stump. And what they did with the prisoners, they would take the men and they would take all their clothes off. And that was one of the things that they did with the criminals, is they humiliated them by completely disrobing them. And then they'd bend them over the stump. And it had some rings down at the bottom. And they would take their feet and their hands and they would shackle them down there and sort of bend them over to this stump. And there was a man then who would stand back, and he was an expert at it, and he has a flagella. It is a stick about 12-18 inches long, about that, and it has several strips of leather on it. And in that leather, the ends of it especially, there are bits of bone and glass, maybe even a few pieces of metal. And he knew exactly how to stand. He would stand about maybe 6 foot away, and he would take that and look at that man who was bent over there, and his flesh exposed, and he would take that whip, and he would flash it down. And the first one would go around, and those pieces of leather, they would wrap around that person. And as it pulled back, those bits of glasses, that bits of glass and stone that was embedded in the leather, he would tear into the flesh. And that which did not tear into the flesh would bruise the flesh. Now, according to Jewish law, you could only get 40 stripes. So most of the time they would only do 39 because they wanted to make sure that they didn't pass what the law said. But with the Roman law, there was no such law. It was you beat them until they're almost dead. And so the man with the whip, he continued to take that whip and he ran it across the back of the man called Jesus. The one that you and I know, who is the Son of God. And they have torn his back into something like hamburger meat. Because he took the place of Barabbas, the guilty, the innocent for the guilty. And he beat him. And they beat him. And they finally got him up. And then they decided they would make fun and they would spit upon him. I think I can almost stand anything except somebody spit in my face. But they spat upon Jesus. They spit in his face. They took a crown of thorns and put it up. And I read about these thorns, never seen them. But they say that a lot of the thorns over there are like 3.5 inches long. They made this crown of thorns. They placed it on his head. They beat him on the head. They gave him a stick. And they make fun of him. They humiliate him. There he is. And they put first they put this cloak about it, and it's that particular cloak, yeah, the original one, is the one that's short. He's still naked, exposed, bleeding, humiliated. Here is the Son of God. Here's the Son of Man. He's bruised. He's beaten. He's bleeding. For what reason? He's not guilty of anything. The man who was guilty is free. He's watching. It should be Barabbas that's going through that. And then they take this man called Jesus and they put a crossbeam He's falling on that. He's weak. I mean, he's lost so much blood. He's been beaten. His eyes probably are swollen almost shut. Did you ever see the movie The Passion? I saw that. And I wondered, yeah, you know, even though I knew it was a movie, I wanted to say, stop! Stop! And just kept beating, beating, and beating. Jesus. Sweetest name that has ever been spoken for that man. They took him outside the city. And the experts, they laid him back. They knew how to do it, from what I can read. They knew exactly how they would put one of the centurions. They would kneel down and put that knee right there. And when you put that knee down, it would force that arm to go out. And then the expert, he would find a hollow spot right there where there's no veins or arteries. And he would take that nail and he would place it there. And then he would hammer it in there. And then they'd take the other one and they'd take it out and they would hammer it in there. And then they'd raise it up. And they would raise him up on that cross. And then they'd take his feet. And they'd bend his legs a little bit. They found out it lasted longer. You see, if he could raise himself up, because the only way you could get a breath is to put enough force on that foot to raise yourself up in that position to get a breath there. Many of them died asphyxiated from what we read in history and manuscripts. All because he took the place of a man named Barabbas. But I want to tell you something tonight, folks. You are Barabbas. So am I. Because Jesus, the man called Jesus, the small, innocent man called Jesus, took my place and yours. It should have been us on the cross. You see, we were guilty of sin. We are guilty of sin. But Jesus, sweet, innocent, compassionate Jesus, took your place. Now what are you doing in return for the man called Jesus? Have you accepted the gift that he gave to you when he died on the cross? Cross of Calvary. Have you accepted that gift? How can you turn away? How can you turn away from that gift when you look at that picture and know that that man did that for you because he loved you? God commended his love toward us and that while we were sinners, Christ died for us. And the thing about it, it really wasn't the Romans, and it really wasn't the Jews who did that. You see, all the way back to the beginning of time, before time, God had planned a way for you to be saved. That's how important you are to God, that he would give his son, and that Jesus would give his life. No wonder he prayed, Father, in his will be let this cup pass from you. But nevertheless, not my will, yours be done. Can you pass by and not let that scene go unheeded? Can you can you not let that love, if you refuse to let that love touch your life? He wants to save you. He died to save you. Why will you not accept Christ? I don't understand. On the other hand, I cannot understand Christians who can call themselves Christians and knowing that Jesus died for them, how they can make it such a light thing of living for Him. Barabbas missed his cross because of Jesus.